today on Annenberg Radio News.
When she's in life with a pimp, she's not going to school. She's not being properly socialized.
Look into the harsh lives of women trapped in the L.A. sex trade. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for February 25th, 2014. I'm Ani Yukar. Thousands of Buddhists poured into the forum today to hear their spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama, speak out about world peace. But outside of the stadium, members of the Buddhist Shugdan sect protested what they described as his intolerance. Daniel Carr Crawford reports.
To many around the world, the Tibetan spiritual leader, known as the Dalai Lama, is seen as an ambassador of world peace. But to members of the international Shugden community, the Dalai Lama has caused more pain than good. The Dalai Lama has criticized the Shugden community, claiming that the sect is divisive and that their prayers hurt him.
The Dalai Lama is basically stating that this prayer of Dorje Shugden harms his life. He is a 78-year-old man. He has more energy and he looks more vital than most people, you know, half of his age. How could he possibly say that this prayer has any negative effect on his life at all?
This is a long-running dispute. It dates back to the 17th century when a minor deity, Dorje Shugden, was elevated. The Dalai Lama once prayed to Dorje Shugden himself, but then stopped. He says the Shugden community threatens to divide Buddhism, which could hurt the cause of Tibetan independence. Many Shugden question methods aimed at stopping their worship.
Right now in India, there are placards on restaurants that if you're a Shugden practitioner, you're not allowed service. They will refuse service. There are placards on hospitals that if, and they'll ask you, are you a Shugden practitioner? And if you say yes, I'm sorry, you and your child have to leave this hospital. We're not going to help you at all. But it's when you're imposing that belief on other people, that's religious discrimination.
The Buddhist leader had sent waves through the international community even before he arrived in the United States. China, which controls Tibet, criticized President Barack Obama for welcoming the Dalai Lama to the White House. The White House tried to sidestep the issue, saying it does not consider Tibet an independent country. It was merely welcoming a spiritual leader. Daniel Carr Crawford, Annenberg Radio News.
The movement against the oil production procedure known as fracking landed at Los Angeles City Hall today. The City Council's Planning and Land Use Management Committee is discussing a motion to ban hydraulic fracturing at this hour. Stephanie Monti will be joining us later today in the show, and we'll bring that to you soon. Debate continued today over the creation of a Sheriff's Civilian Oversight Commission. LA's Board of Supervisors asked for more feedback from Interim Sheriff John Scott and Inspector General Max Huntsman. The proposed commission would lack legal authority over an elected sheriff, but would increase public scrutiny of the department. Federal investigation last year revealed corruption and violence against jail inmates. Supervisors Mark Ridley-Thomas and Gloria Molina are in strong support of the commission, but other supervisors say they still have questions about how the civilian commission would operate. The Bitcoin world has been rocked by an apparent virtual bank robbery. Sean Birch has the details.
One of the most popular Bitcoin exchanges on the internet, Mt. Gox, is missing in action. The Japanese exchange has apparently had over $360 million worth of the online currency stolen. That number represents 6% of the total Bitcoins available. But how did they go missing? CNN Money's Jose Palieri says there are three likely explanations.
Either one, they got duped for months into emptying out their accounts unnoticed, or two, they got duped into emptying their accounts and they did notice, but they didn't do anything about it because they didn't know how to stop it, or three, they were in on it and they duped their users.
Palieri says if it was an outside thief, it could have involved an intricate form of receipt fraud.
If you went back to Mt. Gox and you said, hey, look, here's my receipt, here's my electronic receipt that says I never received that transaction, Mt. Gox would refund them. It would send the money again. Now, the problem with this whole thing is that the person did get their bitcoins, but Mt. Gox thinks they didn't. And so they would continually send this thief bitcoins over and over again.
Okay, But what does that mean for those who invested in Bitcoin on Mt. Gox?
There's essentially no regulation that covers Mt. Gox. No U.S. regulation. The investors who put their money in there, at the current time, it looks like they're screwed. Because they couldn't pull their money out for weeks, and now they can't even access the website. The website's down.
The Mt. Gox fiasco has had an impact on Bitcoins everywhere, with the currency trading below $500 for the first time since November. Sean Birch, Annenberg Radio News.
Stephanie Monti joins us now live from the City Hall with more on that fracking story. Hi, Stephanie. Can you hear us?
Hi. Hello.
How's it going? What's happening over there?
It's going pretty good. They're in public comment right now. I am at the Planning and Land Use Management Committee at City Hall. The hearing just began about an hour ago. There's about 200 people here in support of a motion introduced by council members Mike Cannon and Paul Kretz. Basically, this motion will halt all extreme oil extraction techniques in the city. Fracking's become a real hot-button issue in L.A. communities like University Park, West Adams, and Inglewood. I spoke with Alex Nagy from Food and Water Watch, who said there are about 400 documented cases in the South Coast area where fracking and naturalization takes place. She said that if this bill passes today, it's going to move for a vote by the full city council on Friday, and then they'll start writing the ordinance. Also, she says that she expects this bill to be completed by the summer. Mike Bonin, the writers of the bill, just spoke right now. The main reason why Mike Bonin is supporting this is because of the risk of earthquakes. Paul Kretz was talking about how L.A. is built on oil, but how now oil companies are exempted from the Safe Drinking Water Act and other Clean Water and Clean Air Act as well. He said that 1 to 10 million gallons of water are wasted each time a well is fracked. And then also Bernard Parks, council member for District 8, was also here, and his main concern was infrastructure damage in homes near South L.A. He just does not have any idea of what chemicals are used, and currently they're in the public comment stage, and it's about to get very rowdy. There's a lot of people in there. They actually had to use a spillover room for all the excess of people that were there. But now it's pretty much just up to the vote.
Do we have any word on how this may affect other oil companies?
Well, if this is passed, oil companies are going to have to stop production. They're going to have to either change their techniques or have to follow this regulation.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Stephanie, and happy birthday to you out in the field.
All right, back to you, Ani. Thanks, Annenberg Radio News.
Why is the East Side being ignored? That's what some Boyle Heights residents were thinking today as they gathered at Mariachi Plaza. Andrea Martinez has the full story.
A vibrant community full of color, culture, and art. But for several dozen residents today, it was also a community in need.
Jobs, principally, education, safety. All three are pressing issues.
That's Mario Bautista, principal at Mendez High School. His frustration stems from the community being left out of funds coming from Obama's Promise Zone dollars, which can bring in $500 million into the South LA communities over 10 years. Of the communities receiving funds, many were surprised to hear South LA and Boyle Heights were left out.
The East Side has been left behind. Community members have been working hard and fighting for new schools, more college opportunities for all students, and making sure that there is a pathway towards success for youth in this community.
Education seems to be the most important issue to people like resident Antonio Sanchez as well.
More solution for the problem is, I think, I mean, more school for the students, you know, yeah, exactly, more programs.
Although residents point to some successes, community leaders like Daisy Hernandez says funds are still lacking in other areas as well.
When it comes to education, affordable housing, safety, economic development, we still have a long road ahead.
Sherry Franklin from Urban Development Center says the responsibility lies within lobbyists to apply for these grants on time.
We have to be very vigilant in tracking dollars from the federal, county, state levels, and making sure we're getting our full rider share.
Eventually, Mayor Garcetti says this money will end up benefiting the communities that are aren't in the promise zone. Andrea Martinez, Annenberg Radio News.
Rev up those raincoats, Los Angeles. After tonight's lows in the 50s and tomorrow's mid-60s, we're in for a wet week up until Friday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, if you had any money in bitcoins, now might be the time to worry. We take a look into why. This is likely to be one of the driest years in California's history. Today in Sacramento, NASA held a briefing about this about its collaboration with the state to manage resources and predict extreme weather in the future. Kylie Morgan explains how scientists are preparing California for extreme weather in the future.
NASA scientists say they may eventually be able to predict weather up to a month in advance by tracking a large storm called the Madden-Julian Oscillation, or MJO. Geologist Tom Farr also said California can keep better track of its water using a process called INSAR. That's when scientists look at how much the ground sinks. That happens when underground sources of water, called aquifers, are depleted or recharged. Farr says this method would be better than looking at wells to see how much water is available.
We can look at water wells, and that provides some capability, but it turns out that we'd like more water wells, and we'd like to be able to access wells that perhaps are on private property that people don't always want those to be monitored.
Another important process for studying California's water supply is by looking at atmospheric rivers. Atmospheric rivers are streams of moisture that pour down large amounts of water all along the West.
Keep in mind that one of these rivers transports as much water at any given time as about 5 to 10 Mississippi rivers.
Atmospheric rivers provide about a third of the fresh water supply in the West, but they are associated with most accounts of flooding that occur in the region.
And atmospheric rivers are to the west really what hurricanes are to the southeast.
NASA scientists say that being able to predict weather conditions will allow California to prepare ahead of time for water management, especially in years of extreme conditions like this year's drought. Kylie Morgan, Annenberg Radio News.
84 million pounds of concrete have been poured at the site of the new Wilshire Grand in downtown Los Angeles. The new building will be home to offices, retail space, and a 900-room hotel. I went to the site of the estimated billion-dollar project to find out what's happening with the big development. Mayor Eric Garcetti, Councilmember Jose Huizar, the USC marching band, and more than 200 concrete trucks were all in attendance at last week's record-breaking grand pour. The nearly 20-hour concrete pour laid the foundation for what will be the tallest building west of the Mississippi. But project spokesperson Sean Russell says that wasn't their objective.
You know, we didn't set out to build the tallest building. Really, the chairman's concept was to build the best building that would have the maximum use possible for Los Angeles.
The structure is projected to stand 1,100 feet tall, which is nearly four times the height of the Statue of Liberty. I took a plunge into the 84-foot deep hole located on the corner of Figueroa Street and Wilshire Boulevard to see for myself what all the excitement was about. But contrary to last week's celebration, what's happening now is, well, you can listen for yourself. That is literally the sound of concrete drying. And it doesn't stop there. Here's Project Superintendent Michael Marcusano.
We will be pouring concrete every day. It'll be rare that we're not pouring concrete.
Marcusano says we can expect to see the Wilshire Grand at its highest potential by December of 2016. But for now, we just gotta watch the concrete dry. Prostitution and sex trafficking are an increasing problem in Los Angeles. Some people in the United States believe it should be completely banned, but Camille Riquez has talked to an expert who believes legalizing prostitution could be the answer.
Prostitution and sex trafficking are thought to be correlated. When the numbers in prostitution go down, the numbers in sex trafficking go up. the Van Nuys district officials, LAPD, and a nonprofit organization called the Mary Magdalene Project are working together to bring both numbers down, but they also want to integrate victims back into society. The project offers a drop-in center, a year-long program that offers rehabilitation and other resources. Dr. Stephanie Powell, director of the project, says they treated 300 women in the last year. Some argue that some women are in the sex trade by choice, but Powell says this is not the case.
The myth is that it's by choice. When the majority of the women that get involved in this, it's been by coercion or threats.
Many people think if you make prostitution illegal, you will get rid of prostitution and sex trafficking. But a recent statement from the United Nations said it may be more effective to legalize prostitution. Studies in Nevada and European countries like Germany reveal that implementing legal prostitution decreased the number of women who were subjected to sex slavery. Here's Professor Ronald Weitzer at George Washington University.
I think we know from a lot of evidence that criminalization, outlawing prostitution, doesn't work very well.
Weitzer also says sex trafficking is difficult to monitor because so much of it happens underground. But Powell, who is also a former LAPD officer, believes legalizing prostitution will not work, at least not in Los Angeles.
The legalization of it is not going to drive down crime. What it's going to do is help to legitimize human trafficking.
Even if legalizing prostitution is supported by studies, Weitzer doesn't know if this will become a reality in the United States.
It's unlikely that in the near future, or even the foreseeable future, that we're going to find any state legislature decriminalize prostitution and legalize it with regulations.
No matter what the solution is, the numbers are still rising, and Los Angeles officials are going to do what they can to fix it. Camille Requiestas, Annenberg Radio News.
Before bedroom DJs and DIY indie groups blew up the music industry, there was our Stevie Moore. The rocker has self-recorded more than 400 albums and EPs since 1968 with no sign of slowing down. But as Graham Clark reports, even icons get no guarantees.
You're listening to I Like to Stay Home. It's one of Robert Stevie Moore's biggest hits, although he never punctured the pop charts in his half century of home recording. Songs such as this garnered a hard-boiled fan base, whose fans were out in force at the Echoplex on Sunday. The line to see Moore perform stretched around the block, with people spending up to an hour for the chance to fork over $14 and come inside. Hopes for the show ran high. His opening act was Geneva Jacuzzi, whose schmaltzy gothic synths and on-stage set destruction turned off some of the audience. Jacuzzi's set had her locked in, then shredding a 10-foot-tall foam core cage. Her persona raised eyebrows with lines like, "I'm on my period, my art period," and
"I'm not hungry anymore."
I'm obsessed with live music as a chance for things to go wrong. Even the most polished productions go haywire on occasion. Ill-advised pyrotechnics or lip-syncing snafus are all over pop music history. For intimate shows such as Moore's, the risks are different, but they're still real. Halfway through I Like to Stay Home, an overzealous fan haphazardly pulled herself on stage and attempted to crowd surf. The audience was not on board, preferring to keep their plaid-clad arms crossed instead. The would-be surfer got gently lowered to the ground, then ejected from the venue. Moore seemed disturbed by the outburst. He ended that song abruptly, then announced the show was over, only three songs in.
Thanks for having us.
Minutes later, the portly, wizard-bearded songsmith returned, sashaying before the audience in Homer Simpson pajama pants. He read poetry from a spiral-bound notebook.
Medicinal marijuana. Correct that, medicinal marinara. I was here first. R. Stevie Moore is the gold standard.
The sanctity of his stage show thus returned, Moore proceeded to play beautifully. Around 2 a.m., Ariel Pink got on stage, an alternative pop star whose work with Moore propelled their careers to a new level of relevance in the mid-2000s. He spouted gibberish, futzed up amp settings, and generally lit a fire under the band's ass. Moore may like to stay home. Surely no young women derail his melodies with full-body lunging when he plays in his basement. But what he offers in the flesh is too lovable to ignore. Warts, beard, pajama pants, and all. Graham Clark, Annenberg Radio News.
The U.S. is home to more than 11 million undocumented immigrants. L.A.-based author Reina Grande knows firsthand how successful their lives can be. Her new memoir, The Distance Between Us, explores how immigration can have especially devastating effects on family relationships. Alex Martinez attended a reading by Grande and brings us this story.
What I knew back then was that El Otro Lado had already taken my father away. What I knew was that prayers didn't work, because if they did, El Otro Lado wouldn't be taking my mother away too. A quote from the opening of her memoir, Grande's story begins with the departure of her parents from Mexico to the U.S., or as she called it, El Otro Lado. After living several years with her grandmother and siblings in Mexico, she eventually came to the U.S. as an undocumented immigrant at age 9 to live with her long-absent father. Her memoir illustrates her journey and the difficulties that immigration presented.
It's about the way immigration affects families and everything that immigrants gain and what they lose when they come to the U.S.
Grande is a petite woman, but her voice was powerful when she spoke to the large crowd that gathered to hear her read from her latest memoir. Having an open discussion with the guests, she explained the burden that immigration placed on her relationship with her family.
We're not as close as we used to be. And when I was writing about my childhood, you know, it was just such a wonderful thing to remember how much we meant to each other.
Grande says reliving her past made writing the memoir challenging, but another challenge came while she was writing the book.
While I was writing the book, my father was diagnosed with liver cancer, and that was really hard for me to write about my father when I was a child, even though the father that I had now, the one that was dying, was not the same person anymore.
Grande believes revisiting her past has allowed her to grow as an individual. She now uses her story to reach out to those who are going through similar issues and as a way to voice her own feelings.
Through my story, I would be able to reach out to other people and show them what it's like for an immigrant living in the country, but also all the personal, you know, challenges of putting back together a family and finding your place in that broken family.
Reina is now a full citizen, but she says she wants to help the millions of other children like her by sharing her story. The book is on the shelves now and is also available in Spanish. Alex Martinez, Annenberg Radio News.
Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City! LA Live, we love to come down here and eat and drink and just hang out and party. I'm glad they put something downtown where people can come and hang out and chill. You know, we needed something like LA Live for a long time. We didn't have anything down here. The people and the atmosphere, there's always something to do.
Like to go to sporting events, concerts, and to the eating venues to drink. So I like all the different restaurants. I like the openness of it. I like the design, the architecture. It's a pretty nice place to hang out.
Sonic City!
Weibo, also known as the Chinese version of Twitter, is gearing up to go public. It has more than 61 daily users and hopes to translate those numbers into cash. Christina Savan has the story.
Sina, the company behind the social networking site, hopes to raise $5 million by taking the company public on the New York Stock Exchange. The company has said to be valued at $8 billion. We spoke to Clayton Duby, the executive director of USC's US-China Institute, about Weibo. He expressed concern about Chinese regulation on the social networking site.
We see things that disappear from Weibo. We see things that never get posted to Weibo. So for example, at certain times, the government has said there will be no posts on this subject. And so filters are put in place that mean if you try to post something about that subject and use those key words, they never appear.
Doobie says this inference is causing Weibo to lose users, though he did acknowledge that it may be in part from another rising platform, WeChat.
The growth rate for WeChat is rising more rapidly than it is for Weibo. And the main thing is voice and the ability to use it as a way to make free telephone calls and those kinds of things, but also for certain privacy features. And in fact, to get around censors, people have done that on Weibo by typing something out or making a picture and then taking a picture of it and attaching it so that the text is embedded in a graphic so that the keyword censors can't block that. But if you do that a lot, eventually the censors just block you. WeChat is now being censored, but it is more difficult technologically to do so. And it has not seen, it has not been perceived to be the same kind of threat that Weibo has been, with the ability for my one post to be seen by all Weibo users.
Regardless of what's causing some to drop Weibo, it still has a higher penetration rate in China than Twitter does in the U.S. Christina Savon, Annenberg Radio News.
Keep clicking on our website, annenbergradio.org, for more stories, including one about a new 3D mural advertising by Andy Vasoyan. Now we check in with Kristen Nakashioya to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Coming up on ATVN, we have the details on a new California Supreme Court ruling that says if you charge people to come into your party, you're responsible for them. Find out how that affects USC students and parties around campus. Also, we have an extended weather segment from our anchor, Jacqueline Sarkeesian, about how to prepare for the rain and mudslide and flooding warnings. And lastly, a new study that says your roommate's habits will affect you. Find out more on ATVN at 6.
Thanks so much, Kristen. We'll be sure to tune in. Baby harbor seals won't be getting human visitors in La Jolla anymore. The San Diego City Council voted last night to close an area of the beach where seals come to birth their young. The beach is one of the only seal birthing places in the area. Supporters say closing the beach will help protect mothers and babies from harassment. But divers and snorkelers argue it's possible to share the beach without disturbing the seals. The beach will be closed from mid-December to mid-May. That's it for this Tuesday for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News. I'm Ani Yukar.